Welcome to the Shiur in Targum Parshas Mishpatim. The Shiur this evening is triply sponsored in memory of Nathan Katz, Reb Nosson Tzvi ben Matisyo HaKohen, Olava Shalom. It's sponsored by all three of his children, by Bonnie Keller, by Aaron and Miriam Katz, and Debbie and Eliezer Krupnik. Certainly a beautiful family sponsoring in memory of a very special person. The Neshama should have an aliyah. You should see much nachas ruach in the Torah mitzvahs and Maisim Tovim that the family is involved in. So I wanted to talk about a few targumim in Parshas Mishpatim that where the targum doesn't provide a literal translation of the pasuk and gives us some insight into the pasuk itself. So we find in Perek Chaf Beis, Pasuk Tesvav, the following. V'chi yifata ish, if a man should seduce, besula asher lo orasa, a woman who is a virgin but is not betrothed to anyone, in other words, called a single girl, v'shochav ima, he seduces her, and they have a relationship together, mahar yimharen olo leisha. So he should take her, or he is obligated to take her, if she so desires, to be his wife, right? In other words, she can refuse, the halacha is, she can say, you know, just because we had this relationship together doesn't mean that you automatically get to marry me. But since, certainly, for much of history, if a woman had already entered into a relationship with a man outside, or prior to marriage, that would damage her prospects of being able to get married to somebody else, the man now had an obligation, you know, towards this woman to marry her if she so chooses. You know, he has to take that obligation upon himself. What's striking in the pasuk are the two words mahar yim harena lo leisha. And the sense of the pasuk is that he should take her to be a wife. He should marry her. He's obligated, if she wants, that he should marry her. But what's the translation of mahar yim harena? Two very, very unusual words. So Rashi over here writes, yifsok la mohar kemishpat ish le ishto. The words mahar yim harena are related to the word in Hebrew mohar. And mohar, says Rashi, is the equivalent of what we today refer to as a ksuba. Shekosev lo ksuba v'yisoena. So, to understand this Rashi a little bit better, we first have to define a term which we think we all know, but probably could use a little bit more definition. What's a ksuba? So, the obvious response to that question is, Rabbi, what a silly question. Everybody knows what a ksuba is, right? It's that document that that they signed at the Chosson's Tish. What does it say in the ksuba? I don't know. But, you know, a lot of stuff in Aramaic. I know they read it under the chuppah, and that's when everybody checks their smartphones, you know, to maybe other times also, right? But while it's true that Chazal referred to the document as a ksuba, they also refer to the money associated with the document as a ksuba. You're saying, well, money associated with the document. I thought we paid the caterer so much already. What, there's more money involved over here? Right? So the ksuba fundamentally is really money. What does that mean? The ksuba, among other things, says that the husband is promising to his wife, or the woman who's about to become his wife, he's promising her all of the things that a husband is supposed to do for a wife in marriage. He's also promising her that in the case, Rachmana Litzlan, of his death or divorce, he's going to make sure that there's money set aside that either he or his estate is going to provide for the woman after the marriage is no longer intact. Chazal referred to that money as being the ksuba. How much money is that? That's a big discussion in poskim. I mean, the ksuba itself talks about how it's 200 zuzim. Okay. So how much money is that exactly? So that's a big, big discussion among poskim. If you remember, there's a song that talks about how the going price, at least at one point in history, for a goat was 2 zuzim. Right? The zab and abo bisrei zuze. So I guess you can figure out the relative price of a goat and, you know, make all the calculations appropriately. Many poskim say the 200 zuz of the ksuba is approximately what would take, you know, a median salary for a year. In other words, that the woman should be supported for a year after the collapse of the marriage, again, either due to death or divorce. But approximately speaking, that's what we're talking about. The ksuba is both the document, and the ksuba is also the money that is referenced in the document. Chazal referred to the money itself as the ksuba. And especially in ancient times, when a couple would get married, the husband would say, I have money set aside, you know, it's an escrow, in the case of death or divorce, that's the ksuba money. The Torah refers to that concept of setting aside money before the marriage for the case of death or divorce as mohar. In other words, that's the term that the Torah itself doesn't use the term ksuba. The Torah, as we'll see in a moment, uses the term mohar, mem hei resh, to describe that money which is set aside by the husband at the beginning of marriage in order to provide that kind of safety net for his wife in case something doesn't work out in terms of the marriage. Where do we see that language? So back in Parshas Vayishlach, after Shechem rapes Dinah, he goes, as we know, to Yaakov Avinu's family and says, I'd like to marry Dinah, I'd like to marry your daughter. Harbu alai ma'od mohar. You can charge me as much mohar as you'd like. What does he mean by that? You can charge me as much mohar as you'd like. Basically, he's saying, I really, really, really want to marry Dinah, and I'm willing to set aside for the ksuba money as much money as you want me to set aside. Chazal also in the Mishnayos, although they talk about how the basic ksuba is 200 zuzim, there's something called tosefes ksuba. You're not restricted to 200 zuzim, that's the minimum. A husband who wanted to show that he really held his wife in high esteem would traditionally raise the amount of ksuba money, the amount of mohar that he was setting aside, so as to show his allegiance, you know, his dedication to his wife. If, God forbid, anything doesn't work out in the marriage, I'm not just going to give you the bare minimum. I'm going to make sure that you're taken care of in a royal and an extravagant kind of fashion. That was an expression of love, you know, to have Tosefes Ksuba. So already, even prior to Matan Torah, the Torah is referencing this idea of setting aside money by the husband for the wife, and it refers to it as mohar. Just to add to this a little bit, there's a machlokes in the Gemara as to whether the obligation to set aside ksuba money and to write a ksuba is an obligation that comes from the Torah, or whether it's midrabbanan. Is it a daraisa din, or is it a din derabbanan? So it's actually interesting to note, most Rishonim take the position that the whole institution of ksuba is derabbanan. It's rabbinic, it's not a Torah obligation, with the exception of some of the Balei Tosfos. Some of the Balei Tosfos, you know, lived in France and Germany, say that we paskin like that opinion of the Gemara that holds that the obligation of ksuba is daraisa. And it's interesting to note, one of the differences between Ashkenazi ksubos on the one hand and Sephardi ksubos on the other hand is this question: is the ksuba itself daraisa derabbanan? If you read the Ashkenazi ksuba, or if you actually listen under the chuppah when they read the Ashkenazi ksuba, right? So the Ashkenazi ksuba has a reference to the fact that the husband is setting aside kesef zuzei mason, 200 zuzim, the chazi lechimi daraisa, which you are entitled to under Torah law, the chazi lechimi daraisa. In the Sephardi ksuba, the word midaraisa is not there. Kesef zuzei mason de chazi lechi, 200 zuzim, which you are entitled to. It doesn't say midaraisa. So the reason the Sephardi ksuba doesn't say midaraisa is because most poskim, most of the Rishonim, held that the ksuba is the rabbanon. It's not daraisa. It's a rabbinic. It was created by the rabbis. So the Sephardim say, look, many poskim hold that it's created, that the whole ksuba is midarabbanon. And even if it's daraisa, why do we have to take sides in the ksuba? Right? There'll be plenty of fighting down the road. You know, why do we have to already fight now? You know, it's daraisa, it's derabbanan, you know, we don't have to talk about it. The Ashkenazi tradition was so convinced that the institution of ksuba is daraisa that we write it into the ksuba itself, the chazi l'chimi daraisa, This money is money that you, the Kala, are entitled to according to Torah law. I think Rav Ovadia Yosef was of the opinion that Sfardim should be very, very careful not to use Ashkenazi ksubos for exactly this reason, right? Because, so we have a tradition in the Ashkenazi world that that the ksuba is daraisa, and we write that into the ksuba. But if you're a Sfardi chatan, so you don't have that tradition, the Sfardi psak is that the ksuba is midarabanan. So if you're going to use an Ashkenazi ksuba and you're Sfardi, you're signing off on something which your Rabbanim hold is incorrect. It's not true, as far as you're concerned, that the ksuba is a chazi l'chi midaraisa. It's something that you're obligated in according to Torah law, right? So again, just an interesting back and forth between Sfardim and Ashkenazim that's relevant to the ksuba. What does this have to do with our pasuk? So let's bring it home in a moment. So the Maral of Prague writes in his commentary Gur Aryeh on the Chumash that even the positions, most positions, that hold that ksuba is the Rabbanon, acknowledge that the concept of ksuba is ancient and even predates Matan Torah itself. Yes, the obligation to write a ksuba might have been only a rabbinic obligation, but the rabbis were just putting into law officially, they were putting into the books, something which unofficially had existed for many, many years beforehand, and not only among the Jewish people. When Shechem, and what's the proof? The proof is Shechem. When Shechem goes to the family of Yaakov Avinu and says, I'd like to marry Dinah, I'm ready to give you the biggest ksuba that you could possibly imagine. So Shechem isn't Jewish. The Torah hasn't been given yet. What's he talking about a ksuba? What's he even talking about? How does he even know about a ksuba? Right? What, he went to a shir between Mincha and Ma'ariv? How does he even know about a ksuba? So the answer is, says the Maral, because you see that although the rabbis took this idea of a ksuba and they legislated it, the concept existed before and existed even among, you know, non-Jews. It was not, you know, a uniquely Jewish invention. The idea of putting it, maybe not a fancy ksuba with, you know, Aramaic writing, but the idea of setting aside money in advance of the wedding, that's an ancient idea. So bringing all of that back, so what the Torah refers to as mohar is what we refer to today as the ksuba money. So now let's look again in this Rashi, where Rashi says the guy who has seduced a woman is obligated to marry her if she so desires. And the pasuk says, Mahor yim harena lo leisha. What's mahor yim harena? Yivsok lo mohar. Says Rashi, he'll set aside an amount of money to be a mohar. What's a mohar? Shekosev lo ksuba. That he's writing the ksuba for her. So the term mahor yim harena means let him set aside money for a ksuba. It's a way of saying that he should marry her, but not just he should marry her. He should marry her in a way that's going to protect her by setting aside money to be her ksuba. So writes Rashi, and many of the other Rishonim write as well. The Targum Unculus does not write, does not give that translation. The Targum Unculus writes, Kayoma yekaimina leili itu. The man who has seduced this woman should firmly establish her. Kayama yekaimina, he should firmly establish her, firmly establish the fact that lo le'itu, that she should be his wife. What does that mean? And how does that relate to the words mahor yim harena? I understand how mahor yim harena refers to the ksuba, because the term for ksuba in the lashon of the Torah is mohar. So mohar means ksuba. Okay, so mohar yimareno, he should write a ksuba for her. But what's kayama yikaimina? What does it mean, mohar yimareno, that he should establish her? Where does that come in? So the Oz Vahadar commentary on the Targum Unculus suggests that the Targum Unculus here is really reflecting a translation of mohar yimareno that we find in the Ibn Ezra. If we take a look in the Ibn Ezra, he writes that mahor yim harena means he should attach himself to her. He should tie himself to her, figuratively speaking. Kemo mohar be'inyan kishur. The words Maharyam Hareno, the root, Mem Hei Resh, means for one person to tie himself, to attach himself firmly to someone else. And he quotes a pasuk from Tehillim. Fortunately, those who were there for the Levaya this morning heard this pasuk in Tehillim being recited. Acher Maharu. Right? The pasuk in Tehillim describes how Klal Yisrael, or not Klal Yisrael, certain people, Acher Maharu, which means they attach themselves to another. The word Maharu over there means to attach oneself. So here too, says the Ibn Ezra, Maharyim Harena Lo Leisha means he should attach himself firmly to her, he should connect himself to her through marital bonds and make her into his wife. So that, says the Oz V'Hadar, is what the Targum Onkelos is driving at as well. Kayama Yikaimina, he should establish her firmly as being his wife, means that they should create a kesher, they should create a connection between the two of them. It's a way of saying they should firm up, you know, they had a casual relationship up until this point, and now they should formalize that relationship by ensuring that the two of them are going to get married again, if she so desires. Just interesting to think about how all of these words are connected to one another. The Ibn Ezra is pointing out that the word mohar not only means the ksuba money, but it also is related to the word to tie together, to bring together in a firm and established kind of way. The hashkafa behind that seems to be that, you know, what is the way that a husband and wife can firmly attach themselves to one another? When the husband says that he's going to provide for his wife, you know, for him to say, oh, you know, I really love to get married, that's very nice. But what really binds them together, what really binds any two people together, is financial commitment, you know, that he's willing to, you know, to put his money where his mouth is. You know, he wants to marry her, okay, very nice, you want to marry her. Are you willing to set aside money in order to provide for her in case, Rahmanul Islam, something goes wrong? That's really the test of his commitment to her. The mohar in the sense of connection is one and the same with the mohar in the sense of ksupa. Okay.
If somebody has a life insurance policy,
yeah.
Would you use it for ksupa?
Yeah, in other words, any money that he has, we lemaisa bezman hazeh, we don't formally set aside money. Most people, I don't think most people actually have an escrow fund that they set up before going into marriage. You would have to have money in order to do that. A lot of us go into marriage without too much money. But in other words, the person is saying that, you know, when the time comes, you know, as I acquire money, in theory, a certain amount of it is set aside, you know, is earmarked, you know, that it would go to the wife in the case of death or divorce.
What would be the distinction? Yeah. Whether they're running or they're rising? What practical effect would that make?
Are there any differences between Dereis and Derabbanan?
In this case.
Right. Practically speaking, not really. In other words, this question is just how you write the ksuba. The Gemara discusses whether Dereis and Derabbanan in terms of the quality of coinage that you would use. Again, things that are not really so directly relevant to us nowadays. There wouldn't necessarily be so many practical outcomes. But again, the question just simply is where is the origin, you know, of this halacha of ksuba.
The fact that it occurred before Matan Torah,
right?
Which you said, I mean,
right?
Doesn't that show it's not from the Torah?
No. So the question is, where is this legislated from? You know, in other words, yes, says the Maharal, the practice existed of, you know, people, of husbands to be giving their, setting aside money for their wives even before Matan Torah. But at what point does it become legislation for Jews? At what point does it become an obligation for Jews? And, you know, that's the machlokas in the Gemara. It's the Daraisa, the Rabbanon. You know, is it something that became law at Har Sinai, or is it something that only became law later on, you know, when the rabbis formally made this din that we have to give money, you know, on the occasion of getting married? Right? But the practice might have been even beforehand. Yeah?
Practically speaking, in today's world, there are a lot of marriages now where the woman is supporting the husband.
Right.
And it's set beforehand. He's right. Learning in Kollel,
right.
And she's supporting him.
Right.
So how does he's not putting money away.
Right.
She's the one who's supporting him, and she's the one who's making the financial commitment.
Right. So you have to go back and you have to ask an even a bigger question before that. You know, there are these two words that are in the Ksuba that a lot of people gloss over. I'll mention them right now, and then we're all going to take, you know, we're all going to commit to one another. We're going to forget these two words. There are two words in the Ksuba where the husband says, Ana Eflach. Ana Eflach means, I'm going to work. Right? Okay. You didn't hear it here. So how does that work with Kolo? But let's even take the religious element out of that. The guy's going to medical school, right? And then he's going to do a post-medical, specialty or whatnot, and then he's going to be a resident. He's not making a cent. You know, maybe he'll dog walk a little bit while he's a medical resident, and he'll make Eppes a little bit of money on the side, but he's not making any money for the next 5-7 years, right? So how does that work with Ano Eflach? So the answer is, fundamentally speaking, he's saying, this is my obligation. The woman is kind enough to say, I know that I could demand that you work and support me, but we will have a mutual agreement that I will work and support you. But the truth is, if at any point the woman turns around and says either leave medical school or leave Kolo, that's her right. She has the right to do that. She can choose, and it's a beautiful thing if she does choose, to enable him to pursue things that are ultimately going to be good for everybody, whether spiritually or, you know, professionally. But fundamentally speaking, that is his obligation that he's taking upon himself. Ana Eflach. Right, that's why it's always important. The chassanim should actually read the ksuba, at the chassan's tish before they agree to.